So this is the last week that we'll explore this quality of virya, right? So pretty sure this is the last week in June. Is that true? Yes. Okay. So as most of you know, at Seattle Insight this month, we're contemplating one quality per month that make up this list called the parami, or the perfections. And these are qualities that are particularly potent for lay people. They are, to think of them as like the scaffolding for awakening, and they're qualities that we can practice in every circumstance. We don't need a quiet, solitary room to practice patience. We can also practice with our energy and effort in any circumstance that we're in. In any circumstance that we're in, we can be aware of how we're applying our effort. So virya has this wonderful range of translations, as I've mentioned over the last few weeks. So there's a sense of vitality and vigor in it, right? So it's bringing our full energy, our full engagement to an activity, but in particular to our own kind of mental cultivation, to our own development, our own spiritual development. So in the early tradition, it has this quality of heroism to it, like a heroic, almost warrior-like quality, overcoming adversity, being victorious. And later traditions tend to emphasize more the joy and like a joyful effort or enthusiastic perseverance. But I think where they meet, or at least my kind of understanding of how these come together, is in the form of energy that looks like wholehearted engagement. Yeah, with what we're doing, a wholehearted engagement without the fixation on a goal. Right? How can we bring all of ourselves to an endeavor without force or strain, getting fixated on a goal, but being in there with a whole heart? And that's a very vulnerable, in a way, that's a very vulnerable place to be. So it takes tremendous courage to give yourself to something in which there's a lot of uncertainty. You don't know exactly how it's all going to play out. We never know. But the courage comes in being willing to give all of ourselves, to bring all of ourselves forward anyway. Without guarantee, without kind of promise of a goal, of a particular goal or outcome. Okay. So I've been using probably more than enough water metaphors and similes to describe the various aspects of virya, but this beautiful sutta that I read at the end of the sitting, this question, how do you cross the flood? Which is, how do you cross the flood of conditioning, right? The current and the momentum of our habits and patterns can feel like a rush of a rush or a flood. And so the Buddha said, it's without hurrying, without pushing forward, without rushing, but also without delaying, without holding back. So he said, when I delayed, when I held back, then I sank. When I pushed, when I hurried, when I strained, then I was swept away. So learning how to modulate and adjust our effort is part of the art of practice, so we can start to get a feel for when we're pushing forward and when we're kind of unnecessarily delaying or holding back. And this is not one set point. It's not like we figure this out once, set the dial, and then we're set forever, right? Set the speaker volume and that's it. It's constant sensitivity and adjustment, right? It's never a matter of getting it right and then moving on. It's a training in awareness and sensitivity. So the first week and last week to some degree, I invited us to really contact this vital resource that is kind of the source of our vitality and aliveness, really. So this teaching of really contacting directly our energy and the state or quality of our energy comes directly from, mostly from Ajahn Suchito. So many of you will have heard about, or it gets posted on the website, actually, his book, Parami, Ways to Cross Life's Floods, right, where he goes through the different parami and talks about this process of crossing the flood of conditioning, going against the stream. And what's been so helpful for me about these teachings, his particular perspective on it, is treating our vital energy as a resource, as an important resource that we can contact directly, that gives us so much feedback in terms of the kind of state or current we're in and how it's being affected by what we're doing with our mind, with our speech, with our body. So if our energy is the vital resource, our effort is how we apply it, right? It's what we do with it. So oftentimes when we talk about effort, assume, oh, I just need to try harder. I just need to do more. I just need to kind of buckle down. So it's really hard to talk about virya, this effort, without using sports analogies. But I'm sort of in a land of sports right now with my son. And so noticing the different styles of coaching that there are, right? And maybe some of you have had experience of coaches, but when morale or energy appears to be flagging on the team, right? What happens? Often the coach is like, get in there, you know, shake it off, get back in there. Come on now. You know, I don't know what kind of coaches you have, but what does this do to your own energy, you know? So this is really important, because we often have an inner coach to some degree in our minds. We have an inner kind of coach. So what do we do when it appears that our energy is flagging or low or constricted in some way? Yeah, do we feel like we've just got to, pull ourselves up by our bootstraps, like the American way, pull ourselves together? How do we handle this such a precious, like vital resource? How do we handle ourselves? How do we relate to ourselves in this moment? So the invitation It's really hard to do a recap because more stuff just keeps coming up, but I'm trying to do a recap. But actually what we need, rather than getting tighter and more tense, is in those moments we actually need to drop back, feel the state of our energy, feel the current of that moment. Yeah. Where is it depleted? Where is it scattering? Where is it knotted up? Where is it too forceful? Where is it delaying? Right? So there's the energy and the investigation part. So we honor it, not as something that we need to command or coerce or demand, but something that once we're in touch with it, we can gently steer or direct it wisely, right? Kind of within the limits, within our own natural limits. So if our energy is low for a variety of conditions, a variety of reasons, if we're sick, if our energy is low, to try to force ourselves through that is going to actually deplete us further. So again, in between sinking and pushing, there is a current, right? There is a current. It can be a gentle current. It can be a powerful rushing current, but we'll be able to sense when we're in the flow or stream of aliveness in the moment. But it starts by just checking. And this checking is not personal, right? So if you think of it as the state that water is in, yeah, it's not personal. It's like checking the weather conditions. It's not that when it's scattered or when it's blustery, we're insistent that it be calm, you know? Or when there are ripples in the water, we insist that it be smooth. Right? It's, again, noticing and being attentive, sensitive to those conditions. Okay, so the first kind of questions is, what do we notice in terms of patterns of our own energy? Right? Where do we notice where we get depleted, where we get scattered, where we sink? Yeah, so again, not with judgment, but where do we notice that? And I mentioned patterns that many of us might know about from work or when we undertake kind of challenging projects. There can be the tendency to strain, 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 and then collapse. Yeah. Kind of push, push, push to get to the finish line and then collapse. Or delay, 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 and then sprint, right, to finish. So, or somewhere in between. But if we think of practice as really a long game, yeah, teacher says a marathon rather than a sprint, how can we use our energy and our effort in a way that it is naturally kind of replenishing, wholehearted, but also balanced. We're not pushing and then withdrawing. Withdrawing and then straining. It's a more natural, organic, continuous form of effort that gains momentum on its own. All right. So just to say that this takes tremendous courage, right, to do this. This takes tremendous courage. We're going against the tide of generations of conditioning, yeah, centuries of conditioning when we do this. So we can expect some turbulence. It's not a one-shot deal of relinquishing striving, and then floating carefree downstream. Yeah, have you noticed? It's not? Yeah. So, yeah. So it takes a variety of experiments and kind of skillful means. Sometimes we need an effort to kind of restrain or hold back when we're getting drawn into something unskillful again and again. So the effort is much more about restraining, holding back. Sometimes the effort is much more about that kind of wholeheartedness, like saying a complete yes to something. When we know we're pointed in a skillful direction, when we know that what we're engaged with is likely going to bring benefit to ourselves and others, maybe not in the way that we can completely discern or know, but we can encourage ourselves to bring a wholeheartedness to that. Yeah. So again, we often don't need major movements. A light touch, a light like willingness to experiment, notice. If I just do one thing differently in this, in the midst of this stream of habit, just one thing a little bit differently. When I notice a strong tendency to collapse or withdraw, if I can just take one wholehearted step forward and then notice. Yeah. Okay, so I mentioned a few things that are said to give rise to energy, this kind of courageous energy, or what one teacher calls the movement from willpower to willingness, which I quite like. So that's from John Wellwood. He said, this exploration of effort is the movement from willpower to willingness. Yeah. A willingness to be completely here in this experience, even though it may not be completely to my liking. Right. So things that can help encourage us, can bring courage or energy, are kind of trust or faith. Right. So this can be trust in Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. This can be anything that we find supportive or trustworthy in the moment. Anything can be a resource for us in the present moment, something that can help us stabilize, steady, fully be here. It can be the kindness of someone around us, the goodness of somebody that we notice. It can also be bringing a more full awareness into our bodily experience moment by moment. Yeah. So when we bring awareness fully into the body, energy follows that, right? So when we bring awareness fully into the body wakes up, right? So I think many of us have experienced that in some form. We kind of simultaneously drain the power out of our thinking, but also kind of awaken, allow the energy of the body to gather together in one place. So it feels more unified, potent, strong, a stronger current. It's not being pulled out or drained. So also, the parami are all practices of letting go. Right? So sometimes when we hear about effort or hear about practice or cultivation, it can feel like we have to get something. It can feel like we have to get something that isn't here now, kind of an attainment. So you can kind of check out. If you feel like that's what practice is like, you can notice what that does to your energy. If it's something I have to get something that isn't here now, it can lead to a strain. But if we remember, we can always remember that practice is much more about a letting go of what is not needed, a relinquishing of what is clouding, occluding, blocking, letting go of that, then we'll bring a very different kind of effort to what we're doing. Right? So Ajahn Suchito talks about whenever you perceive that there's some kind of lack, yeah? So a lack, maybe a lack of energy, not enough energy, some kind of lack, it's like consider that instead of a lack, it actually might be a block. Yeah? Might be, if we're back to the current again or the river, it might be that that is a place where the natural current has been diverted, or it's been kind of captured in an eddy or a vortex or a whirlpool. It's been clouded in some way. So what we need to do in those moments isn't so much to get something, but to disentangle or be willing to kind of come closer to that which is kind of blocking or occluding or obstructing. So this is key in all Dharma practice. If it's much more about letting go, then what I do with my effort and energy is much more about relaxing, softening, honoring, allowing, returning, then pushing, getting, making, fixing, right? And so to do that, there's a tremendous amount of trust that's required, that when we do that, we will not be kind of bereft in some way, that is actually a direction that leads us closer towards our fullness, right? So Ajahn Suchito says, if you imagine, what do you do if there's a knot? Like a knot. You go in kind of gently and softly trying to see, okay, can I loosen it a little bit here? Where is it already loose? You start where it's easiest. Yeah, start where it's easiest. Okay, I can connect here. I can connect that. This is where the energy is already flowing. This is where it feels natural and straightforward, right? This has wonderful, wonderful quotes that have stayed with me for years. He says, some effort is always needed in Dharma practice, but you don't need a jackhammer to crack a nut, right? You don't need a jackhammer to crack a nut. Sometimes soaking it in water is better, right? So noticing the kind of energy and effort that's helpful, skillful in any given moment. So as a process of letting go, last week I mentioned kind of three forms that we can notice, three patterns that we can notice our energy getting into in meditation, but also in daily life. So this is a teaching from the Mahayana. Before that, first there's just the natural sluggishness that we can feel in practice, right? Can come from a certain kind of resistance, not just being tired, but a kind of inertia, sluggishness or sinking. That is a hindrance that all of us will notice and find a way to work with. If we don't really hate it, fight it, or are intimidated, afraid by it, there's a lot of room to inquire, to notice, to bring forward our heart and sensitivity, even when it's slurpy and slothy and sluggish. Yeah? The other three forms that I mentioned, I'll just say these briefly and then I want to discuss. But There's a Mahayana teaching that says that the three forms of laziness, laziness is in quotes, are procrastination. So that's the delay, the delaying, something that we've likely had some aversive relationship to in the past. We don't want to feel that same aversion again. Busyness is the second form of laziness. And this is enthusiastic effort around something that is a little bit beside the point. Yeah? So this does not look like typical laziness, like curled up on a couch. This looks but if we look a little bit deeper, it looks like we are definitely in the stream of habit. Yeah. It is not the kind of courageous moment by moment, wholehearted effort. We're kind of in the stream of habit. Getting busy, getting kind of frenzied about something that might be a little bit be not quite connected with our intention. So these are not. And the third is discouragement, which is really like a loss of heart, a loss of confidence. Yeah, it's a kind of giving up. And so this can, all three of these are patterns that we can notice, right? And so when we're in kind of discouragement, it's like, oh, it's not worth it. I'm not up to the task. It doesn't matter anyway. There's a real kind of can feel like apathy, or it can feel like a loss of heart.
Yeah.
It's not worth my effort. Yeah. So all three of these are kind of forms in which it can seem like virya or energy is absent. These can seem like an absence of virya. Right, but they're patterns that are like diverting or occluding our natural, flowing, connected energy and heart. So to appreciate them as patterns, not as character flaws, as things that we can be sensitive to, as parts of nature, not as who we are, is such good and vital practice. Right. So one quote, and then I want to hear from you all. So this is from Pema Chodron. Right? Laziness is not particularly terrible or wonderful. So you can think of laziness in this broad way, also in quotes. Rather, it has a basic living quality that deserves to be experienced just as it is. Perhaps we'll find an irritating, pulsating quality in laziness. We might feel it as dull and heavy, or as vulnerable and raw. Whatever we discover as we explore it further, we find nothing to hold on to, nothing solid, only groundless, wakeful energy. The process of experiencing laziness directly and non-verbally is transformative. It unlocks a tremendous energy that is usually blocked by our habit of running away. This is because when we stop resisting laziness, our identity as the one who's lazy begins to fall apart completely. Without the blinders of ego or selfing, we connect with a fresh outlook, a greater vision. This is how laziness or any other pattern of resistance introduces us to the compassionate life. Okay, so why don't we just sit quietly for a moment? Okay, I'd love for you to have a chance to talk together about this a little bit, and then we can come back into the larger group. Was with a group the other night where people were particularly chatty, and they brought out a big Zen gong for me to hit. It was very satisfying. Yeah. So good. It seemed lively. Anyone be willing, either kind of in the room or at home, anyone be willing to share a little bit about what you noticed in the group? So it's such a gift to share, and to have other people here. And please don't share any specifics about what your group members shared, but share what your experience was like, what you noticed, in speaking in particular, in listening, or just around some of these questions, around the patterns of energy and effort, where you delay, where you might, sink, get swamped. Yeah, Barbara, be willing to come here would be great if you're willing. Thank you. So people can see you and hear you. This is, if you're willing, over here in a little bit of a trek, but then people can see you.
It's really an observation, a comment on what we did in our small group, because we were talking about all with, we were sharing experience of low energy states. But then what I noticed was just got quiet for a moment and noticed the sound, the noise level, and the really high energy in this room. And it's like, yeah, this is what Sangha can do, is to energize us all.
Sangha can definitely provide that, some of that kind of uplift to our inspiration, and the places where we'd usually kind of quit or drop off, are we stay in there a little bit longer. But also this energy of kind of investigation and experimentation can change our energy too, even when we're investigating low energy states, right? If we're experimenting, interested, curious, what's happening there? What's going on there? Where is it solid? Where does it get stuck? That's like bringing a very different energy into something that can feel so all pervasive and stuck sometimes. So great. Else, what did you notice? Oh, thank you.
It's too good not to share.
Oh, great. Great. Okay. One person coming forward in the room, and then Emery, I see your hand.
So there were several really nice things about our conversation. One theme that came up seemed to be that reasons for delay are sometimes related to our feeling about whether we can do this or not. And that certainly resonated with a couple of us. And another thing that came up at a different point is actually that these thoughts that are going through our mind about whether we can do something or not and what may be causing the delay. Fit quite nicely with what you were saying about the metaphor of the flood of our feelings and thoughts and how to navigate through that. It seemed useful to be practicing and learning about Buddhist practices for managing that. So for me personally, I think that it's very different now from 2 years ago, for example. So that is a really valuable thing. And what else? Oh, yeah. So sleep was a common thing that also came up. For some of us, part of the motivation for exploring meditation was not being able to sleep and these thoughts that just keep coming up. I guess that's part of the flood that you are trying to figure out how to manage. And also kind of like a dual thing came up, which is feeling sleepy and not being able to do things because of feeling sleepy, which is really interesting because there's this kind of middle ground somehow that you'd like to have to be able to be comfortable and happy. So, yeah. Very good conversations.
That's very, very fruitful. Good. Thank you. Yeah, different imbalances of energy, right? So some of us come to the practice wanting help getting to sleep, and then we this happened for Deepama, actually, who I mentioned last week. For years, she couldn't sleep. For years and years, she couldn't sleep. So much emotion and so much grief. And then the first couple of years, I think she did nothing but sleep for a couple of years. And that's not uncommon, if you'll notice. People have been practicing a long time. Ask them what their first couple years of practice were like. Often the whole system is kind of is like acclimating. Some of you may have noticed this as well, acclimating to different ways of using our attention and energy. So if we can hang in there through some of that turbulence, great. Thank you for that, and I'm glad it was fruitful. Okay, Emery.
Hi. So yeah, energy is a topic that I'm really, really interested in. So after last week, I spent some time, you know, just trying to notice my energy more. And last week I was saying that, like, there will be hours and hours of my day when I don't even notice what I'm doing. Like the outflow is so constant, the outflow of energy, that I don't even notice it's happening. So I started actually looking down at my body during the day, like, oh, okay, I'm here. I have a body. It's not just what's out in front of me. Like there's, like you were saying, I'm an energetic being. So noticing my body, noticing my energy. My question that I have for you is that brings me to a stronger sense of self in a way. Mm. When I think, okay, here's me, this body, this energetic field, and how is it, am I interacting with the environment and letting that energy flow out to the point where I don't have any left? I'm wondering if you can comment on being mindful of energy and balancing energy while still not taking this sense of self to be solid or.
Yeah, it's a great question. And you might want to just notice, like, hold that as an inquiry. So my experience is that the sense of self comes about through clinging, right? So taking a sense of ownership or making solid something which is naturally fluid, fluctuating, and not personal, and kind of claiming it or getting identified with it or getting entangled with it. So you can notice, just investigate, if when I dwell deeply with my body, not thinking about my body, right? But with a direct experience of my body and my energy, there's likely some interim thing where it feels like me looking at my body or me having a body. But if we're staying with that, staying with the direct experience, the body expresses itself through sensations, right? Through heat, pressure, heaviness, lightness, warmth, you know, all of that moving through the body. So when you're close to that, is there a solid sense of you there, orchestrating, owning, directing that? Are you directing that? Is that yours? No. But check out. So being a sense, having a lighter or more permeable sense of self does not mean we don't have a center. It does not mean we don't have a center. It's not ours. there's not like a self-image or identity that needs to come on along with that. But our energy is quite unified and aligned. Yeah, body, heart, and mind are in the same place and moving in a skillful direction in an unobstructed way, but has nothing to do with my plans, preferences, agenda. Yeah. So, but hold that question for yourself. Is it possible is it true that dwelling deeply in the body is connected with a strong sense of self? Or does that come afterwards? Yeah? Okay. So, yes, thank you. And thanks for the inquiry. Even the, you know, awareness can be very light. So that just remembering, oh, I have a body, just that. We don't have to go deeply into our intestines or anything in the middle of the day. It's like just the memory, oh, there is a body, right? Something in the present moment that I can contact directly. Yeah, something that just that helps me, helps support all of myself coming forward. No, not all of myself, but that helps support, you could say, wholeheartedness with attention and energy. Yeah, great. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, maybe Carla, I have to be brief, but I'd love to hear from you.
Thanks, Carrie. I'd be interested to hear your take on using different types of meditation techniques out of sort of our tool belt to bring up and sustain energy, motivation for daily practice, and how, you know, we choose different techniques. I mean, I guess that's the question. You know, I think we need to be flexible, but not constantly be switching. I'll just kind of leave it at that. I'm curious to hear what your personal experience has been with energy and different techniques.
Yeah, lovely. Thank you. Love that question. And I think you kind of answered it. But I think it's good to be flexible. And like I said, I think we can gain a lot by experimenting. You know, sometimes many of us get so into like following the rules, like I've got to do this and then I've got to do that. And cause it says this and I've got to do this. And so our whole practice has really sort of a forced march slog quality about it, right? Like I'm task oriented all day and then I sit down and just have to keep cranking it out. The Buddha really encouraged experimentation and investigation. So we can do this from a place of interest and a place of kindness, or we can do it from a place of restlessness. And you can start to feel the difference. So when it's coming from restlessness, it will feel very fidgety. and we won't be able to stay with anything for long, and oh, this isn't quite right, and maybe I should listen to this talk, and well, this teacher says this, and well, maybe I should try breathing. No, metta would really be better for right now, and you know, it has that feel. So when we can notice that, it's so much more helpful just to kind of stay with one thing in a steady, kind of steadily, gently, persistent way. So that can be helpful in that instance. When we do feel some degree of settledness, it can be helpful to experiment. But give it long enough to notice what the effect is, and don't always be checking for progress, but just notice the effect. So Thich Nhat Hanh said something that I've always come back to again and again, because I've felt a lot of license and space to experiment with my practice and kind of follow intuition, but really be devoted towards the things that I know are helpful, like be wholeheartedly devoted towards those things that I know are helpful. He said to a student once, Thich Nhat Hanh said, "You know what, you want to know my secret?" He said, for maintaining a meditative practice over whatever, 70 plus years, he said, "I do what works until it no longer works." You do what works until it no longer works, right? So, you know, we could have a big discussion about what does it mean to have it work and not work, but to trust ourselves to a degree that we can experiment, but when we find things that are helpful, be wholehearted about them. Come back to them. Come back to them when you feel like it. Come back to them when you think it's working. Come back to them when you feel like it's not working. So there's persistence, and we'll talk about patience next month, but there's also that journey of curiosity and investigation, in which we can try different things and notice the effects. And that brings a tremendous flexibility of mind, like you said. So, yeah, thank you. Sorry, I had to kind of rush through that a little bit. So as we close for today.